Welcome and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. CMS recently announced an initial round of improvements to the updated Medicare Plan Finder, based on recommendations and technical advice provided by NAHU and our members. This week, Justin Lumenau, a member of the NAHU Medicare Advisory Group, joins NAHU lobbyist John Green to review these improvements and how NAHU is continuing to work directly with CMS on the rollout of the Plan Finder to ease the transition for Medicare agents and beneficiaries. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. This week, we are pleased to welcome Justin Lumenau, a member of the NAHU Medicare Advisory Group and the Executive Vice President and Senior Advisors, a family-owned and operated general agency for Medicare Supplements, Part D, and Medicare Advantage plans based in New Jersey. Justin has 15 years of experience across different industries and is active in group benefits and Medicare, and he has specifically worked closely with CMS in recent weeks on the improvements to the Plan Finder. Welcome, Justin. John?
So thank you for being on the podcast today, Justin.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak to everyone. Thanks, John, for having me.
I consider this a really important call to address the Medicare Plan Finder and to let our members know exactly what has been going on and how we've been conveying issues to them. And so, as you know, we've identified a number of issues with the Medicare Plan Finder. We had a mailbox. People submitted their issues to us and we've gone through them. And I think it would be helpful, Justin, for people to know just kind of how this came about and how we're filtering these questions to CMS.
Yeah, certainly, John. So, you know, just from a timeline perspective, the new Plan Finder was released really at the end of August. It was August 27th. And the old Plan Finder was shut down at the end of September. You know, in that time period from when the new Plan Finder was launched, we started tracking a list of open items and issues. And as you mentioned, NAHU has the mailbox that people can email to the Medicare Plan Finder at NAHU, any issues that they're seeing. And we started to compile this centralized list of issues and make sure we can reproduce the issues and understand the severity of the impacts. And on October 1st, so the first day really of the new plans becoming available and the old tool not being available, Janet Trautwein helped set up a call with HHS and CMS, and she brought me in kind of late in the evening, but it was a great opportunity to really, you know, get a seat at that discussion with the key players that are really working on this new Plan Finder tool. And so we started the discussion that evening on October 1st and started to voice some of our concerns, you know, list of items that we had pretty high level on that first call. It was kind of a last minute call to join, but we started to build that relationship. And on that call on October 1st, we got a commitment to basically have ongoing conversations twice a week and set up basically a status call of sorts. You know, we're meeting now twice a week since that call on October 1st. And on each of these calls, we're really going through an issue log, that centralized list of issues that we started tracking. And these are things that potentially are features that existed maybe in the old tool that we think are necessary in the new tool, or they could just be things that in the new tool aren't working correctly. But we've got a list, the total list, you know, we've got about 30 or so items that we've been tracking, and we've seen some good progress on these calls with the CMS and HHS folks. There seems to be definitely support from their side and some sense of urgency to get some of these issues resolved, especially the higher priority items. So
in that regard, Justin, how is it organized?
Yeah, so the list is got, you know, there's a lot of information. It's basically a, you know, an Excel spreadsheet, but the key information on there, we definitely have a severity column. So we want to make sure we're prioritizing the fixes and the request for the fixes based upon the impact to the beneficiary. So the severity is definitely important so we can make sure that CMS understands the impact. Now that's another column, is the impact. So we actually define, you know, what is the impact of this issue to the beneficiary? Obviously from an agent perspective, there's impacts as well, and we want to highlight those things. But CMS is most concerned with the impact of the beneficiary and making sure that they're not impacted negatively by this new tool. But we've got a lot of information, not just severity, description of the issue. One of the important things are the steps to reproduce the issue, because CMS, in order for them to be able to fix the issue, they have to be able to reproduce it. So before we even report an issue to CMS, we're basically vetting it out. We're trying to reproduce it ourselves to make sure that when we get on that call with CMS and we sent them the issue, that it's a valid issue that we're able to reproduce, because that's the only way they're going to be able to fix it, is if they can have those steps to reproduce. So those are the key, kind of the key data points that are in that tracking list that we're reviewing with CMS.
Before we get into what specific issues we've asked CMS to address, and you kind of go through some of those, what sort of data elements do you need from our members in order to recreate it?
Yeah, good question, John. So, really, and it's kind of what I was saying, but basically, you have to think about it as if someone is reading the email or however the issue is being communicated, are the steps in there clear enough for the issue to be reproduced? So, things like the zip code being used, whether you're looking at an authenticated user or an anonymous user, the new Medicare Plan Finder has a logged in feature, which would be an authenticated user using their MyMedicare.gov account. So some of the issues are specific to the authenticated users versus the anonymous user. So that information is important. Whether you're looking at a Medicare Advantage plan or a prescription drug plan, which plan specifically are you looking at? What drugs are you entering in on the tool to recreate that issue? And just the specific steps. I clicked in on this button and then I went to that screen and printed this, this report. But the detail, so that someone just getting that email, that issue for the first time, can actually reproduce that issue is very important, so that CMS is going to fix it. The only way they can fix it is they have enough information to reproduce. Screenshots are helpful. That also helps us really understand the issue. And then the impact of the issue, the impact really to the beneficiary. Obviously, again, from an agent perspective, there's impacts and things that create inefficiencies or efficiencies. But if we can document the impact to the beneficiary, that's what's really going to get the attention and the priority of getting these things resolved. So,
well, we're very lucky to have you as our technical expert. You've always had a high interest in technical issues and what CMS is doing sort of on the techie side. At CAP conference, you presented many interesting programs that CMS is doing and really gotten into the weeds. And I can't thank you enough. And our membership really owes you a debt to be able to convey this in a way that they understand, because you speak the same language as CMS, surprisingly.
Don't say that too loud. No, no. I think it's important, like you say. I mean, obviously I've got a technical background and that was kind of my education, but you got to understand the business side of things too, and be able to kind of connect the dots from the business to the technical. And that is definitely, something I try to do and bring those two pieces together so that we get movement on technical issues. So, yep.
So why don't you share with our listeners the list of issues that you feel have been critical that they have addressed so far?
Sure. So, the number one biggest issue that when the tool was initially released, and the biggest gap that we saw, was the tool did not initially include the total cost calculator, which is basically someone shopping for a Part D drug plan being able to look at the total cost, meaning the premium for that plan plus the cost of their drugs for the year. And there's 25 to 30 different drug plans, or even if we're Medicare Advantage plans, if you're looking at Medicare Advantage plans, and to have to manually go through 30 different plans and manually calculate the premium times 12 months, add that plus the total drug cost, and then create a spreadsheet and sort that to find out which is going to be the most cost effective, frankly, is just not doable with the volume that most of our agents that are in this business have to do in a 6-week, 7-week time period. Just wouldn't be possible. So that number one issue, that function was not existent in the new tool when they first launched it. We definitely stressed the importance of that and the urgency of having that function put into the new tool. And it was initially going to be before October 15th was the initial response. And on our calls, we continued to raise the sense of urgency with that issue. And it was actually deployed about a week early on October 9th. It's called Total Drug Plus Premium Cost, is now available as a sort option on the plan results page. So the agent doesn't have to manually, or the beneficiary doesn't have to manually calculate all those different plans. The tool now will do it for them, which is really the only way we'd be able to get through the volume we need to get through in the open enrollment time period. So that was the number one biggest issue. And again, it was resolved, and we're very happy it was resolved, because it definitely, you know, makes our work a little more achievable during open enrollment. So
what other issues are cropping up, Justin?
You know, a lot of nuanced kind of data issues when the tool was first released. One specifically we noticed with an authenticated user, and it was kind of a unique situation, but when they logged in and they went through the process and they got to the plan results page, there were drugs that we called it the disappearing drug issue. But basically on the plan results and plan details pages, the certain medications were not showing up under the pharmacy cost. It was showing up under mail order, but it was not showing up under the pharmacy cost. And the impact of that is basically they were misled to think that a certain plan is going to be less expensive for them because their drug costs were lower because the drugs were not there in the report. So potentially beneficiaries could have enrolled in a plan that wasn't the right plan for them. And that issue was identified, it was October 5th, it looks like, and it was resolved just a few days later after we presented that to CMS. So that was another one that was fixed. Maximum out-of-pocket cost on the Medicare Advantage plans. When the tool was first released, there was an issue identified where the maximum out-of-pocket was not showing up with the correct value. It was some sort of calculated projected cost value rather than the true maximum out-of-pocket for those plans. So that was an issue that we reported. That was October 2nd, and that was also resolved within a few days by CMS after we reported it. There was an issue with the sort for total drug costs. So when you get to the plan results page where there's those 30 different plans, and you're trying to find which is going to be most cost effective. And this was actually before they added that total cost calculator, but there was an issue where the you would sort by total drug cost and the sort was not sorting correctly. In other words, you know, you're expecting the lowest cost to be at the top of the page. And as you scroll down and look through the page, it wasn't sorting correctly. Some things were higher and some things were lower. And therefore, again, a beneficiary could have enrolled in a plan that wasn't most cost effective. But that issue was resolved, again, based upon feedback we provided, and they addressed that issue as well.
I heard a lot of comments on those very issues that were resolved, so we're very pleased that those have been knocked out. But as I understand it, we're still having some print issues. What's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, when they first released the tool, the print functionality, and basically the print functionality is very important because if you're meeting with a client face-to-face, you want to be able to print out the report and go through it with them. Or even if you're meeting with a client over the phone, you want to email them a PDF report of the plan and how it's going to work for their particular drug list. And the initial release of the tool, the print format was frankly very ugly. It was overlapping information on each of the pages. There was like no margins at the bottom of the page. So like things were getting cut off from page to page. It just was very sloppy and frankly unusable. They've released a couple of enhancements to the reports, and I'll call them readable now, but there's still some enhancements they're working on to continue to improve and make them cleaner than they are even today. But from 2 weeks ago, even to today, the reports have come a long way, but there's definitely more work to be done. Another issue with the reports that we've been pushing on, when you're doing a comparison report between two different plans and you want to show them side by side, the comparison report right now really has very limited information. It's got basically the name of the plan, the premium, the deductible, and then the total drug cost. But what it doesn't include is the drug level detail. So they can see, you know, side by side for each of their medications, which plan is going to, you know, cost what for you know, their specific medications. So that's definitely an area that we're leaning on to have addressed as well. But you know, I will say the reports are at least usable at this point, although there's still work to be done.
So relative to usability and navigation, have you been hearing about issues with relative to the back button?
Yeah, good question. So not to bring you the old tool, but there was a navigation bar at the old tool. I think that users were comfortable with that. You know, they could click on that enter drug page or enter, you know, pharmacy page. And this was an intentional design decision with the new tool. We found out from CMS that as they're really trying to clean up the experience, they intentionally don't have the navigation bar. They are adding some improvements to the navigation because you can't, the back button on the browser is not a good navigation function. It's gonna break things. It's just inherent in any real website that's not a really safe button to click to go backwards. So they've added some navigation to edit your drug list specifically on the plan details page. So when you're actually looking at a plan, if you realize you forgot to add a drug or you want to change a drug, you can click the Edit Drugs button and it'll take you back to be able to change the drug information. So there are places to do that. Same thing with pharmacy. If you want to change the pharmacy, right now you have to go to the Edit Drugs. And then after that comes the pharmacy page where you can change the pharmacy information. So they're working on a more direct link to the Edit Pharmacy as well. So it's still a little bit choppy on the navigation for some of those things, but I will say, you know, there's workarounds, like I just mentioned, to get you kind of through the process.
So before we go through other issues that CMS is working on for us, tell our listeners a bit about how you've become so good at navigating the new tool. What have you done to become as proficient with what we have as possible?
Yeah, so a big portion of it's volume. I mean, we do, our office does about over 2,000 of these drug reviews in the open enrollment period each year. And so we're very active on the tool, just kind of working through different cases. So that's a big portion of it. Just as you kind of do more and more volume, you can kind of start to figure it out. And frankly, I think some of it has been on these calls with CMS. I mean, there were things that, like that Edit Drugs button that we weren't aware of, and we brought it up on one of the calls about the navigation concerns, and you know they mentioned that option was there, and you know there was another situation with the ability to flip back and forth between Part D plans and Medicare Advantage plans. I think that was an issue that was reported by an agent. We didn't know about the option, and on one of the calls with CMS, they actually mentioned, you know, there's a button at the top of the plan results on the right top right side where you can flip back and forth between Medicare Advantage and Part D plans. So, you know, it's really just, you know, experience working with the tool and getting the feedback. You know, there isn't really, I'd say there isn't really a great tutorial out there because the tool is so new and it's constantly evolving. And they're doing multiple releases a week to address some of these issues. And it's really just working with the tool and kind of getting used to it.
That also is a good point in that CMS is not done by any means, are they?
No.
In terms of making changes.
No, I definitely not. You know, they're actively working on this, and you know, I would expect continued, you know, work on the tool. You know, even past the end of open enrollment, there's certainly a list of items that we've brought up that call them lower priority, but definitely would improve efficiencies and be better for beneficiaries. But we've agreed that they're not open enrollment critical. So you know, there's going to be a list of items that will continue to get addressed even in 2020 and ongoing with this tool. So. You know, I actually think as I get more and more experience in the new tool, you know, once they address some of these bigger issues and continue to evolve it, I actually think the new tool is quicker in responding to our, you know, just as far as the average time it's going to take to process one of these. I don't think we're there yet, but I think the technology is there such that it's going to be a quicker tool once they address, you know, some of these additional open items.
All right. Well, let's go down the list some more, but why don't we? What about plans not showing pharmacies in network?
Yeah, so this was a big issue when they initially released the tool. You go through the whole process, you get to that plan results page, and for each one of the plans, there's a note that says 0 of 2 pharmacies in network. And basically what it's supposed to say is based upon the pharmacies you've selected in the steps prior, if one of them is in network, it should say 1 of 2, or if 2 of them are in network, it should say 2 of 2. But every single plan was showing 0 of 2 pharmacies in network. So basically it was a bug that was not representing the right information for Part D plans and for Medicare Advantage plans, which made it kind of difficult to compare and pick the right plan. So that was resolved. Again, that was one of the issues we brought up on our calls, you know, from the initial calls we had back on October 1st. And that was resolved, I think, about a week ago. Now it is presenting the correct information, whether it's 1 of 2, 2 of 2, or 0 of 2, pharmacies in network, it is displaying correctly now.
So in the coming weeks, what other list of issues have you discussed with CMS?
Yeah, so the biggest open issue we have still right now would be the mail order pricing. With the initial release of the new tool, the mail order pricing is using some sort of standard network mail order pricing, which is not really relevant because when someone signs up for a drug plan or Medicare Advantage plan, you know, they're given the information to set up mail order with the carrier's preferred mail order program. And so the beneficiaries that are using mail order pricing are getting the preferred pricing. So for the tool to show a standard mail order pricing doesn't really make sense and really prevents us from finding potentially the most cost-effective plan if the mail order pricing is better than the pharmacy for another plan. So that's one of our high priority issues that's still open, and they're still working on a resolution for. So they, it's a known issue, and again, they've acknowledged it, but it's just not resolved yet. Some of the other high priority issues seem to be data specific to particular medications. So we're finding these, and we will probably continue to find some of these data specific issues with medications. But I know one, for example, we had the other day that's a high priority with the drug Janumet, which is a pretty expensive drug. It's about a $500 a month retail cost medication. And basically, there's certain plans that do not cover that medication, but the tool is showing with those plans a cost of a dollar a month. So it's showing as a not covered drug, but it's showing the full cost is only a dollar a month, which basically misleads the beneficiary to thinking that's the most cost-effective plan, and they could potentially enroll in that plan, only to find out when they go to get that medication, it's actually $500 and not a dollar. So that's a pretty big pricing and data issue. Seems to be specific to certain medications. Again, the one I just mentioned, there's another drug we noticed it with, which is a very expensive medication called Aubagio, which is about $80,000 a year, and it's a very similar issue where it's not showing the correct price for the non-covered plans. So these are kind of one-off data issues with specific medications, and we still want to hear about them because we still want to report them so they get resolved. But those are, I would say, the other high issues we're experiencing. One other high issue that's still open has to do with the deductible calculation with certain plans. We've noticed where the tool seems to be calculating the deductible, whether or not the beneficiary is meeting the deductible based upon the full retail cost rather than the cost before deductible that they're actually paying. So what that does is it misleads the beneficiary to thinking they're going to meet the deductible sooner than they actually are, and the costs are actually erroneously too low in that case. So that's another issue where that's a high issue that's still open that we're working through. So those would be the, when I look at the severity of the open items, you know, there's a number of medium and low kind of navigation and usability type issues that we have workarounds for but aren't ideal. But those would be the big issues that are still a high priority right now. So.
And we've also had some issues around dosage and frequency, haven't we?
Yeah, so this seems to be specific to authenticated users. I think initially it might have been affecting anonymous users as well. But basically, there's certain medications, and I'll give you some examples, where they come in like prepackaged containers. So like Restasis is a very expensive eye drop, and most people take two a day, they say, is the prescribed amount. And they come in a package of 60 little eye drop containers. And so most people get one package of 60 per month. And it's about, the full cost is about $500 for that, you know, that's the full retail cost. But the tool was defaulting to 60 packages of 60 eye drop containers, which would be $30,000 instead of $500. And there's other insulin pens like Humalog or Novolog, where they come in packs of five pens. Most people get one pack per month, but the default was showing five packs of five pens per month. And we've got a number of others that are similar where they're just prepackaged containers or bottles where they come in, you know, 15 packs of 15 milliliter bottles of a certain eye drop, for example, or Spiriva, 30 boxes of 30, you know, quantity. So, you know, these are things that I say there's a workaround because if you notice the issue, you can just adjust the quantity. But if for someone that's not doing this every day, they may just think that, you know, that's the correct quantity, and they're going to see very inflated pricing and be very confused by that. So as an agent, that's something just to be on the lookout for until they address it. If you see some ridiculously high pricing, it could be because of that quantity issue.
So what's the status of the anonymous drug search?
Yeah, this was one of the big issues that was brought up initially with the new tool. Basically, with the old tool where we could run a query for someone without any sort of identifying information, and we could save their drug list ID and password date and zip code and be able to pull that up again in a few weeks or the next year or whenever and save that information. And the feedback we've gotten from CMS is there were some security concerns with the anonymous drug lookup search. And that's the reason they've kind of moved towards this authenticated MyMedicare.gov login to save your drug list for future use. That said, they have acknowledged that there's a gap with someone who's new to Medicare, who doesn't have a My Medicare account or maybe even a Medicare number yet, and they want to do some shopping to find out what the best drug plan is going to be for the, once they go on Medicare, right now they can't save their drug list. And for someone that has two or three medications, you know, it might not be that big of a deal to go back in a week later and re-enter them. But there's people out there that have 10, 20, you know, or more medications. And, you know, for them to have to, you know, shop and re-enter everything each time they want to compare plans, it's really not a fair experience for the beneficiary in those cases. So CMS has acknowledged that use case and acknowledged that this will be something that they will continue to consider. It's definitely not going to happen during open enrollment. They've acknowledged that this is, you know, it's just not something that will be addressed in the next couple of months, but it is something that's on that list I mentioned earlier of things that we're going to continue to look at with them in the beginning of 2020 to be addressed.
So Justin, you spoke about a lot of errors that we're picking up relative to drug pricing based on a number of different issues, whether it's dosage or frequency or just bad, you know, algorithm, something like that. And we've expressed to CMS our concern that once the beneficiary starts using their benefit, that they'll find errors when they get to the pharmacy counter. And in the past, the way to resolve that has been to file a complaint against the agent to effect a change. Because as you know, if you're in Part D, you're stuck. You have no option. And so I want our listeners to know that we've had very high-level discussions with HHS and the White House about effecting some sort of OEP on an emergency basis for next year, should there be widespread issues of this sort. We've also opened discussions with the Ways and Means Committee, who has jurisdiction on this issue, that helped restore the OEP for Medicare Advantage, and are very friendly to this idea that we may need such a mechanism as a beneficiary protection for those that, through no fault of their own, end up in a plan that either isn't appropriate or wasn't as it was represented, either in terms of what the drug cost or, you know, the pharmacies available and so forth.
Yeah, no, and that's, John, I mean, that is incredibly important, the what you mentioned about an OEP or whether you want to call it an SEP for you know, issues related to the new plan finder. And frankly, you know, we've been pushing, you know, we've been working together on this for probably a year and a half, 2 years. You know, our perspective is, regardless of this new plan finder tool being released, beneficiaries should have an opportunity to change their Part D plan during the OEP, just like you can with your Medicare Advantage plan. There's issues that could arise that they didn't realize with their drug coverage until they go to get their medication in January. And then this year, you know, we have a whole nother dynamic with a brand new tool that just adds, I'm sure, additional examples or cases of beneficiaries that are going to be stuck. And so we can use that, you know, this year's situation to hopefully get us an OEP ongoing, you know, in future years as well. I think it would be great for beneficiaries and they really should have that option. There's so much disruption. And on top of it all, we didn't really talk about this earlier, but there's actually a lot of disruption this year from a carrier perspective related to Part D plans and some significant premium increases and things that, you know, we're catching as many as we can, but I'm sure there's going to be certain beneficiaries that don't read the letters, don't get the emails, don't follow up, and they get a big shock in January. And you know, we're pushing hard to protect those people and appreciate everything you're doing, John. Like you said, with the White House or from a legislative perspective, that'd be a huge win if we can get that added in for January.
It really would be. And I agree that this should have been included in the OEP. You know, last year we had those calculator error issues, which all assisters, beneficiaries, you know, ships and agents and brokers and so forth have found that there were real significant errors in the out-of-pocket calculator, pretty wild swings. And, you know, CMS cannot just keep doing one-offs and assisting beneficiaries in that way when the potential could be quite significant this year in terms of need to effect a change. I think it's been really important for agents to set expectations with their clients for this year as sort of an anomaly year, if you will. It's hopefully won't be the norm, right? Hopefully we'll fix a whole lot more before the next AEP. But we really need support from CMS and from the administration to help beneficiaries.
Absolutely, I agree.
Anything else you want to add, Justin?
No, I just, I guess I reemphasize, what we said at the beginning about, the organization, AHU, and we really would not have an opportunity to, from an agent's perspective, get that meeting with CMS and more importantly, the ongoing meetings. And that was 100% AHU and Janet driving that and getting a seat at that table to continue to drive improvements to this tool. So, I was very excited to be brought into those discussions, and it's created a lot of extra work for me, but, I'm very glad to be a part of it and hopefully drive some improvements going forward. So thanks again for having me on today, John. Appreciate it.
Sure. I think that the letter that we sent to Seema Verma was very helpful in setting the table for that to happen. And we're very pleased with the communication and the assistance that we're getting with CMS. And thank you for, being that bridge to them on the technical aspects of this. Well, I hope everyone has a good AEP, as successful this year. Keep sending us issues as you uncover them. And remember, it's all about the details. Send us screenshots and those things that, Justin alluded to that we need so that we can replicate the problem so that they can be addressed and fixed as quickly as possible. Well, thanks so much, Justin. And until next week, cheers.
Thanks, John.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.